nice
Okay.
to meet you. This is the ericsvaughnracing.com podcast, I think number 61. And today I have Billy Ball, and you're a local guy. You live in Michigan on the west side.
Yeah, Kalamazoo.
Kalamazoo, and we're just social media buddies. And I said, hey, you want to talk with me for about an hour? I said, yeah. You're like, wait a minute, are you right messaging the right person at first?
Yeah, I mean, I it's funny because I had already listened to a few of your podcasts, and then I got a message, and I was like, who could he be mixing me up with? I don't even, my name isn't really similar to anyone else's, so I was very flattered, so thank you.
Well, you're very welcome. I'm just looking to talk with motorsports people, connect, you know, network a little bit, and just get the perspective of the regular person.
Yeah, I'm pretty regular.
I mean that in the best way possible.
Sure, absolutely.
But you're a racer. You're a CCS racer. Is that right?
CCS and WIRA. I'm taking this year off to work on some shoulder health. So, yeah.
Oh, that's
hopefully
like
jumping back in next year on both of them. I just race whatever ones I can get to, and depends on the track too. So.
And over in Kalamazoo, you're hitting Gratton, Gingerman, all the local ones, Mid Ohio.
I haven't ridden motorcycles at Mid Ohio yet, but I've driven cars there, and I can't wait to go there on a bike. So,
okay, so yeah, let's dive into that. Tell me about your car experience.
So I actually grew up way more into motorcycle racing than car racing, although I was always into both. But as I got older, all of my friends did car stuff. They raced cars, so I just kind of, all right, I'll just do that. So started putting cars together and going to Gingerman and Grattan and stuff like that. I think 2014 or so, I entered into this series called Grid Life. So I ran the Time Attack events with them for a few years. Super good time. It's like a big festival and racing all smashed together.
Yeah.
The guy that puts it on, Chris Stewart's really awesome. The main director, I think his name's Adam Jabe. I think he's still the main director. He's super awesome. Great group of guys, made lots of good friends doing that stuff. Lots of good like business opportunities. I do a lot of like fabrication work on the side, mostly for like safety systems for race cars, such like roll cages, things like that. But yeah, and then a couple of years ago, also my cats are probably gonna stop by and say hi throughout the video.
That's all right.
They love when we talk to people on the internet. So
seems important.
Yeah. They're part of the crew. So yeah, a couple of years ago, you know, I turned 30 and I was like, man, I really want to race motorcycles. I've always been into it. I feel like if I don't at least try it for a season or two, I'll just be annoyed at myself forever. So yeah, 2019 was actually my first year.
Okay.
Started in May. I went to a random Friday night in May with a bike I picked up for like $2,300, a ZX6R.
Yeah.
And I was having a fuel pump issue, and I couldn't get it to rev over like 12,000 RPM. And since it's just a track bike, you can't like go test it out on the street. You know,
right.
I didn't know that this was a problem at all. I just bought it and took it right to the track. So bike won't rev over 12 grand. So I just keep shifting through all the gears at Gingerman. And then it starts to go like, won't go above 10 grand. So I'm like, all right, fine. I just won't brake anymore. And I just started trying to throw the bike into the corners, and I just tucked the front going into turn one, my very first track day, like the third session, and got to test out my new safety gear. So that was pretty cool.
And you figured out that like, crashing low side isn't the worst thing at all. I mean, you don't want a high side or hit something, but most of the time when you low side, it's not a big deal.
Yeah. And all my low sides for the most part have been pretty okay.
Yeah,
I did have a shoulder dislocation from a low side in August of last year, but
yeah,
I was cooking pretty good when it happened. So
pretty high speed crash.
Yeah, it wasn't the initial low side that caused it. It was in the sweeper section at Gingerman.
Okay.
And I ended up sliding all the way out to the grass, and as soon as I hit the grass, I kind of tumbled, and that's what did it.
The grass is not level.
Yeah, no, like almost any track you go to, the grass isn't level. So
Whoa. You
got to be careful when you go off, to just kind of like let the bars do their thing and just kind of hang on.
Yeah, there's been one where I crashed. I lost it at going clockwise at Grattan at the jump.
Yeah.
I jumped it way too hard and I didn't make the corner. and I just tucked the front and I was fine until I hit the grass, and then everything started tumbling.
Yep, absolutely.
It was almost a yard sale. So
yeah,
it was a nasty one.
I actually coach now, and one of the things I tell students, especially at Grattan, is coming up over the hill, it freaks a lot of people out because the first thing you see when you come up it is grass.
Yeah.
You don't see the track anymore. So immediately you're looking at grass, and when you come up over the hill, some people just don't stop ever looking at the grass. So I kind of pound in their heads, like, you know, our first slow laps around there, you know, look for where that turn is. You know that it's there now. So as you're coming up over the hill, look to your right, and you'll look at the track instead. And hopefully that's helped a lot of people, because typically it's the novice guys and the intermediate guys that just go soaring into the grass there. So,
and you know, I think maybe a good thing to do is to grab a back shift just before you get off the hill, because that already starts slowing you down. Your engine braking is already in the right position. Because
absolutely,
I wasn't doing that when I crashed, and you have a lot more freewheel, which seems faster, right? But then you have to slow down a lot when you get stopped.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually ran it backwards for the first time over this past weekend. So I was there coaching with STT. And so I had driven it in a car backwards before. And when Owen, the STT director for Northern right now, he was like, yeah, we're going to run it counterclockwise. I was pretty much like, I'm out. I'm not even going to show up. Because even I've driven in a car, and I was like, I would never do that on a bike. That seems like crazy. It's no. So, but I ended up getting twisted my arm for it, and I showed up, and I pretty much take back everything bad I said about it. It was a blast. There's a couple of sketchy areas like I thought, but it is, if you just kind of respect the track and treat it like you're learning a whole entirely new track, because it's essentially what it is. Like, none of your reference points are the same. Obviously, you can't use the same apexes. If you go into it with the mindset that it's a fresh track that you've never seen before, you'll have a really good time.
Oh, yeah. It's totally different. So many different aspects about it. You got turn three. Now it's uphill mostly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's downhill and uphill both ways. But it's more dramatically uphill there. And the fast straightaway, and then the land goes away from you, so you're wheeling, you know, one direction versus coming up a hill. It's pretty cool, the differences. I like the elevation and all the camber changes. Like, you don't get that at most tracks. And that was the first track I ever rode in the racetrack, and I thought that was normal. We did clockwise one day, and then the other day we did counterclockwise. And I was like, this is awesome. And I didn't realize that most tracks don't do that.
Yeah, I can't imagine, like, Gingerman running counterclockwise, especially with bikes, because...
We did it one time.
How was turn 10B counterclockwise?
It was a parade lap session. They had everybody go out. It was, like, nobody's going super fast, be really respectful. It was like a novice session. But it was cool, because you have, instead of decreasing radius turns, you have increasing radius a couple of times.
Yeah.
So you carry a lot of speed. It's got a lot of potential. I mean... Both directions, I'd always want to move guardrails and have extra pavement runoff, but I mean, that's just, you know, my safety side talking, but that's never going to happen.
Yeah, it's hard to get tracks to spend the money on, because there's not a lot of return for them, you know. That's a big risk for a track to move a guardrail, you know, 15, 20 feet back and add more gravel or add more, you know, asphalt at the edge of the track, so you have a little bit extra braking before you hit the grass, things like that. It's the risk for reward doesn't make a lot of sense for some of the tracks, and it's totally understandable. It's hard enough to keep them open. So
I'm asking for massive landscaping jobs, and that's
not too much. Just kind of like take what you got here and just kind of redo it, leave the track, but just like push everything else around. So yeah, not too much though.
I would love to design.
My friends can show up over the weekend and knock it out.
Yeah, I would love to design and build and oversee a racetrack being built. I have no experience with that, but it would be cool to go through that process and see all the asphalt being laid and how they have to excavate everything and clear out trees. You know, it's a massive undertaking to do that.
Absolutely.
Build a new track from scratch.
It's cool to see a track like Grattan that's just been around for so long. And it's virtually unchanged. There's not much about it. They haven't really changed any of the corners or added anything. And it's so unique. You know, if they went through and, you know, a really good new pave job for that track, maybe some like curbing, like candies, like white and red around the track, that would be like a Northern Barber, just kind of the way it's set up with all the elevation and everything.
a natural road course, you know, into the land with Grand Prix curbing.
Yeah. I'm not very good at Gratton, but it's definitely one of my favorite tracks.
Yeah, I was able to do, I think it was 22s or 21s both directions there.
That's
I was
incredible.
Pretty happy with that.
Yeah, that's rolling, man.
Yeah, but I mean, there's still people faster than me out there.
Yeah.
There's always
someone. I think my fastest is probably like mid to high 25s on clockwise. I couldn't get my lap timer to work for counterclockwise. I use a Starlane Corsero.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It didn't want to work. I could probably set it up on the computer where it would run it counterclockwise, but I didn't have my laptop with me there.
Yeah.
So I just
got a Corsair in the mail.
Did you?
Yeah, I got the with the lean angle and the potentiometer sensors and all that stuff.
Yeah. I think for the I originally bought that Starlane for my ZX6R, but I have a ZX10R now because I don't know. Just I can it's
why terrifying. Not right
it's such a scary bike but it's fun, it's so fun. I think I'm gonna move away from the Starlane stuff and go back to AIM because everyone has it, it's so easy to get data and kind of compare things. But this other company, i2m, they make a dash kit that's kind of like more set up for the ZX10R. Like you can set up, you can get into the ECU and actually control your aids by sector for the tracks, which is, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And then you can integrate it with all the potentiometers and sensors and things like that.
Yeah,
so
a bunch
I
of different.
I love data stuff. I'm like an engineering technician by trade. So I love like getting all sorts of data and things like that. And it's easy to get lost in it, but it's just cool to do it.
Yeah, you know, I never had that data when I was racing. I just had a number, right? I had a lap timer.
Yeah, that's all I've used so far is the lap timer.
But it's cool when other people come up to you and say, hey, I want to put my lap timer on your bike to get your data to compare against me. You know, it's cool to see. You know, and a lot of the lap timer companies now have bike-specific lap timers that will directly hook up to your bike.
Yeah, AIM makes one specifically for the ZX10. I think it's called like the MXK10 or something. But it does lack some inputs. So I'm limited on what I can kind of set up math channels for. I think you can buy like the expansion module and make it better, but
yeah.
So with the i2m, you can also use their dash button pod setup. They have it specifically set up for the ZX10. So the bad thing is like with all the, I went from a bike with absolutely no rider aids at all. I had a 09 through 12 ZX6R. I have two of them. They're just kind of hobbled together.
Yeah.
But if you crash and you bust that module on the bar, that's it. Like whatever your traction control or whatever it was set at, that's what you get. So you can't really mess with it anymore. So I want to get one of those pod setups that'll make that a lot. They're a lot more crash resistant and things.
More protective. So you protect your investment.
Yeah, if you got a plan for a crash in this sport because you don't think it's going to happen, you might as well leave your bike in the trailer.
Oh, yeah. It happens to everybody. You know, it's just part of the sport.
Absolutely.
Now, are you a Formula One fan, being from cars?
So I was in Formula One like late 90s to like maybe 2006-ish, like Michael Schumacher dominating everything.
Yeah.
And then it kind of got like boring because Michael Schumacher dominated everything. And I'm a lot more into things that seem achievable for me. So obviously I was never going to race Formula One, nothing like that. But so I started getting into like more like GT style cars. So I follow like IMSA and Trans Am, stuff like that. But recently I've been trying to like ease myself back into Formula One because I think the cars are just so cool. Like all the technology in them is incredible. And there's just so much teamwork that goes into it. You know, all the engineers, all the like data specialists, things like that. And what these cars can do is absolutely incredible. And so I've been trying to watch it here and there. I think I watched the first two or three rounds this year, but because I'm so into motorcycle racing, it's really hard to fit in like a 2.5 hour Formula One race when you're trying to watch Moto America, World Superbike, MotoGP. I'm a huge British Superbike fan, Australian Superbike. Like I try to watch all of that all the time. So throwing in the Formula One stuff as well kind of gets where I'm just in front of the TV until eternity. So
sure, and it could be 10, 20 rounds per series, and there's a lot of rounds.
Absolutely. And I especially with like World Superbike, Moto America, and British Superbike, I try to watch all of them, not just, you know,
all the classes, like the Baggers, the Junior Cup, the Twins Cup, you know, the Stock 1000, the Superbike, the 600 you know, class.
Yeah, especially like Super Sport and Twins Cup and Junior Cup. These are people that I see at a weird CCS event, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So it's local fun to guys watch someone. Come out to I've been on grid with August Nord. I've been on grid with you know, some of these people that are trying to race Moto America now, and that's so awesome to me.
You can really see the level of where they are and where you need to be, or, you know.
Exactly, yeah.
All that stuff. Yeah, it's great to see. It's a really fun sport. And you said you're not doing any rounds this year, but what was the last round that you did?
The last round I did was it was actually the last WIRA Northern round last year at Nelson Ledges.
Okay.
I crashed. Nelson Ledges has weird turn numbers.
Yeah.
I think there's only like 7 turns on that track, but they say there's like 25. I don't know. But it's like the opposite of Blackhawk Farms. I don't know if you've been there because you helped with CCS. They say there's only 7 turns, but there's like 11 or 12 actually.
Yeah.
So I think it's like turn 3, if you think about it in your head. I just came in. I think it was like the B Superbike race. I was battling for a podium spot, like for third place. Second, third, and fourth were kind of like in a little pack, and first place had kind of gotten away from us. And I just came in like a little too hot and like spooked myself up, stood the bike up because I thought I was going to hit the guy in second place or third place. And I went into the grass and I stood the bike up and then I couldn't get it to turn.
Ah.
And it's because I like spooked myself and like kind of locked up and I was so hard on the brake still. I just literally couldn't get the bike to turn because I was all in my head. I actually went into the grass, the bike slid, and I got thrown off the other side of it, and I broke my collarbone. So that's how my season ended.
At the hospital.
Yeah. Then I found out that my wife can drive the truck and trailer because she had to drive us 5 hours back.
That's so hard when you have to.
I think that might be why she hasn't been too keen on coming to some of the track events this year, because she knows I'll make her drive now.
Yeah. You just need to get a driver.
Yeah. I like driving, but it sucks afterwards when you're just so tired. And
yeah.
If I could sleep at the track for like an hour and a half and then drive, they'd be better. But
yeah, it's good to have rest after you've just been, you know, racing at the limit of physics all day. Absolutely. And then go home and drive another 5-6 hours or wherever you're coming from. Sometimes it might be 12 or more, or you're in California. Yeah. Who knows where you are?
Yeah. Yeah, like when we do the Road America events, going there is fine because you gain an hour, you know what I mean? So by the time I get to Road America, if I leave work at 2, it's only like 7 when I roll into the paddock. But when I leave, by the time I pack my trailer all back up with the bikes and all my gear put away and have the truck ready, it's 6 o'clock Wisconsin time. That means it's 7 Michigan time. And now I got to drive 5 hours. And I got to be back to work at 5 in the morning.
Yeah.
So that can be brutal.
Yeah. That next day is not going to be good. Usually there's no way to avoid it that I found.
Yeah. No, I mean, just saving up my vacation days. And if I'm super tired, I'm just like, nah, I'm not going.
You know, I started corner working this year.
Yeah, I saw that.
I did the first one at Blackhawk Farms with CCS. And then I did Road America with Moto America the weekend after. And that was a blast. I'm about to do my third one this weekend at Mid Ohio.
Okay.
So I'll be there all weekend, after work on Thursday at 2 p.m. I'm heading straight there. So I'm going to be camping there all weekend and, helping out with flagging and communications for race control. And, that'll be my first event with WERA. So each one is a different organization so far.
Yeah.
So
that's cool.
They all have their different flagging rules. They're all slightly different. You got to know where you're at and what's going on. And it's just cool to see the different differences and how they run things and how the organization is, you know, internally. I've never seen that. I've always been in the racer side of it. So it's a whole new perspective on things. And you see tons of different things about the track from standing there for so long, like, oh, there's a bump there, right in the carousel on the entry there. Everybody
hits you it. See the other bikes hit it, and you're like, oh, okay, there's a bump right there.
Yeah. And so you analyze things even more because you're just standing trackside. You see riders' positions, their lines. You know who's the fastest guy, so you're like, he's probably on the right line, and everybody else is wrong, you know?
Right, yeah. What turn did you work at Blackhawk?
Blackhawk, they work at every turn. They had
I'm sorry. What turn were you specifically at?
So it was my first time ever. So the main guy took me around and showed me around to everything and gave me a lowdown of what to look for each corner. And where to stand and, you know, how to, if you have multiple people, what to do with that for catch or for flagging. So it was cool to go around to different stations. I was at kind of turn three for a little while. And then I moved over to turn seven pretty much the rest of the day, the rest of the weekend. And turn seven was cool. I had picked up a bunch of people. You know, it's the last corner on the track, so everybody's trying to fight and make passes. And it was a hot spot for sure. I must have picked up six or seven bikes. There was the first guy, I'm not going to say any names, but the first guy I came to was not moving. I was like, great.
Yeah. Oof.
And so, but he ended up, he just was on his right side, broke his collarbone, and all the pain from his collarbone was like, I don't want to move. It hurts a lot. It doesn't feel like I can move anything, you know? So I was like, okay, well, can you move your fingers? Can you squeeze my hand? Yes, he could. He knew what day it was, all this stuff. So I've been in that situation before. So I know what to do. I was trained as a CNA in high school, so I know a little bit of medical, and I was a lifeguard, CPR, and AED. So I have a little bit of skills. You're not supposed to move the body. You're not supposed to drag someone. You know, what if you pull him like towards you and he's got a broken arm or something? That's not good. Right. So you got to be aware. And also, there's bikes on track moving at 80 miles an hour, 20 feet from me. So now I got
to. Yeah, yellow flags just mean don't pass, you know, for the most part.
So you got to be careful. One of the rules about corner working is if something happens, don't immediately run to the scene. You think, well, when, why? Well, what if there's oil on the track and there's more bikes coming right behind it?
Right.
Then you get hit by a bike. Now you can't help that person who needed your help.
Right.
And a lot of these times there's only, at the smaller events like CCS, there's only two people per corner. One person has a flag and one person does catch. So then there was a situation where two bikes were down and during a race, and I'm running to get the first bike, then I'm running to get the second bike because I can't even do anything for the riders, really.
Right.
I don't have one of those doctor, you know, boards.
Yeah. You just got to kind of hope they get up under their own power and
can
navigate themselves away from being in an impact zone.
One of the riders helped get the other rider up and they walked over and I got both bikes out of the way and they didn't have to red flag it. I was like, that was great. I did what was needed, and no one got hurt extra. And,
the race where I crashed, I felt like I was still pretty close to the track. And when I hit, I knew, like, right away I had broken my collarbone.
Yeah.
I've never broken one before, but I've broken a lot of bones. And you just get, like, a pop that goes through your body, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, I hit, and on the first impact, I was like, oh, that's a collarbone. And then I, like, tumbled a couple more times. And I got super lucky. I basically like shattered the thing. I have a big plate in here now with like, I think 9 screws or something like that. But I didn't hit that pocket of nerves that a lot of guys will hit and girls will hit when they break their collarbone. So mine didn't hurt. It was uncomfortable, but I was really in no pain. And so when we go to the races, my wife loves coming to the races. She doesn't really care about track days.
Yeah.
But she watches from different parts of the track all the time. She just changes it up. So I never know where she is. So there's the possibility that she just saw me get, you know, yeeted off the bike. So I'm trying to like get to my feet and like be like, I'm okay. And just like wave wherever she is, trying to wave for her. And the corner worker's like, dude, you got to stay down. Yeah. And I'm like, no, I'm all right. I just broke my collarbone, but I'm okay.
Right.
And I just wanted her to know that I'm good. I'm fine. And then I like kind of ran away. But, yeah, it's a weird kind of adrenaline thing you get to when you crash. Cause I've gone down like not super hard, but for some reason, like the way your body acts afterwards, like it's hard to pick up a motorcycle. you know what I mean? Like, if I drop my bike on grid or something, which I've done before, it's like, oh, you dummy. And you can, like, pick it up right away. But, like, if you crash, even if it didn't hurt at all, your body does, like, some weird adrenaline thing, and you're, like, kind of shaky, and you're trying to grab it. And
well, it's like
so much harder to pick up your bike after you crash.
Think of it like you're just running in a marathon and you fell down. That's kind of what happened. You're riding a bicycle in a race and you just fell down. You're not just sitting down and doing nothing. You're like, you're at the limit of your physical ability to muscle a 400-pound motorcycle around a track.
That's true too.
As fast as you can. So your body's like pretty tired, and also something just happened that's a big deal. You know, it's shocked from it. And you're pissed off. All these things are going through your head. You're like, oh no, what did I break? Can I get back on the bike? Am I hurt? What's going on? Is there anybody behind me? All these things you're trying to think about.
And it seems like every time I've ever crashed, especially in a race, I've always been like, I got to get up, got to get out of the way, got to make sure the bike's not an impact zone, because I feel so bad if the race gets red flagged because of me. All I want to do after I crash is to not let the race get red flagged, because I don't want to be that guy, you know?
Yeah.
So, but even though every other race around the grid would totally understand, like, oh, it happens, man. It's just a red flag. You're okay. We're okay.
Yeah, you never want to see it happen.
Get red flagged.
You don't want to see it happen, but I mean, it's a flag at our disposal for a reason, because sometimes it's needed. You know, we don't want to do it, but it's necessary sometimes. If there's a really bad situation, we don't want anybody else in that corner going super fast.
Absolutely.
So
it's funny that you say you picked up so many people in turn seven. So after I got back on, like after my very first crash and my on that track night or whatever, I got my bike put back together, and I was like, all right, that kind of sucked or whatever. I didn't really care. I was like, I'm still going to keep trying this. I had told my wife, I want to try to race. That's like the only reason why I'm doing track days, is I want to race motorcycles. So if I can make it to advanced by the end of 2019, then in 2020, I'm going to get my race license and I'm going to try to race. So I signed up for a Friday night, Saturday, Sunday at Gingerman, the very next weekend that they had. And so I showed up on Friday night with a good working bike, ready to rumble. Went out in the novice sessions. I did whatever I could to be the guy behind the coach. You're supposed to rotate, but no one in my group seemed to care. So I was like, you guys mind if I go in the front again? So I would just like study the coach the whole time and see what he was doing. And then the last like two sessions of the day, they kind of like let you go by them, and you run around on the Friday nights. And then it gets dark, and then they're like, all right, so it's done. So I spend the night in my trailer. Sunday or Saturday, we start doing the classroom stuff. And then I get put with this really good coach. I think I'm in like group three or four. And it's me and one other guy. And we're both like kind of moving. And then we start passing group two. And then we're like kind of starting to catch up with group one. And then he lets us go. And then by the session right after lunch, he's just like, hey, I think I'm going to move you to intermediate. So I'm like, oh, okay. That's awesome.
Sweet.
That's great.
Cool. You got the bump.
Yeah. So I got a bump. I'm like, now all I have to do is get to the next group, and I'm going to race next year. This is going to be great.
Yeah.
So do the rest of the day in intermediate. And then the last session of the day, I'm chasing a coach around in intermediate. I didn't know it was a coach. He didn't have a jersey on. He was just out there kind of goofing around.
Yeah.
I'm just, this guy's fast. I want to follow this guy around.
Sure.
And it turns out it was the director, Owen.
Oh yeah.
And he's, I'm talking to him afterwards. I didn't know he was a coach. And so he pulls over after we get off the track and he flips his helmet up. And I thought we had made like a couple of risky moves out there and for intermediate, like passing rules. You know, I saw him pass someone and I pretty much got just as close as he did. And we whipped through traffic. And it was probably 6 feet, but when you're moving, you know, you never really. Anyway,
close.
So he pulls over and flips his visor up, and I'm like, buddy, I'm not going to be anywhere near you. You're going to get yelled at. And so I just go away. And then I find out later, I see him like with a walkie-talkie. I'm like, oh, that's the director, duh. So then I go up and ask him, like, hey, how was I doing out there? And he points at me and he's like, come here. And I was like, oh boy. And he's like, I got to move you to advanced. And I was like, what? I only did like 4 sessions in intermediate ever. He's like, yeah, you got to go to advanced. And I was like, I don't think that's a good idea. I don't really want to, I don't know. And he's like, no, like you know what you're doing. You have the pace. You need to go to advanced. So I was like, well, can I at least go out there again with someone in intermediate? And just, I want to be sure that I can do it.
Yeah.
So then he throws me out there with this other coach who's really fast. He's a CCS racer. I follow him around and we come back in, and he's just, the guy is awesome. Hopefully he doesn't get mad for name dropping. Dave Vaughn, I don't know if you've ever heard of him.
Oh yeah.
The name. He's actually pitted. He was pitted right next to me.
Yeah.
And so he comes up, we put our bikes in there, and I'm just on like some Dunlop Q3s. So I just pull my bike in and put the rear stand on, and that's me. I'm like, I'm done putting my bike in, getting ready.
No tire warmers.
Yeah, nothing. Just, I'm going to like make this as simple as I possibly can. So he's pitted right next to me. He comes over with a track map. He points at turns 5 and 6, and he's like, you're not going wide enough here. You need to go a little wider. You'll go a lot faster if you go a little wider here. And I'm like, oh, okay. And he's like, also, we were passing people that were 100% on their brakes while you were still 100% on your throttle. You need to go to advanced because you're going to hurt somebody.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. I guess I'll go to advanced then.
Yeah, sometimes in intermediate, the differences in skill level are pretty wide. So
yeah. So then I spent the all day Sunday in advance just trying to – that was like the first time I was starting to get passed by people.
Yeah.
So I was like kind of freaking out at first, but then I was like, okay, this is what you want to do. This is where, right. You know, you're only going to get faster doing this stuff. So, yeah. And then at the end of the day, Owen talks to me again, and he's like, what'd you think? And I was like, this is the most awesome thing I've ever done ever. This is sweet. And then I was like, I really only wanted to do track days because I wanted to race. He's like, oh, you want to race? I'm like, yeah, this is like, that's why I'm here. Like, yeah. Track days are cool. They're fun in cars, but doing timed events is way more fun. And racing is where it's at. Like, I want to race. So he's like, okay. And then he like had SCT has like all your contact info. And then, so I get a phone call on Monday from him. And he's like, hey, what are you doing this weekend? I don't really have any plans. He's like, all right, well, you need to come to South Beloit, Illinois, and come to Blackhawk Farms. You're going to race. I was like, okay, sounds good. Let me ask my fiance, because I'm getting married the weekend after this weekend. So I don't know if this is a good idea. And my wife is super awesome. She's always been so amazingly like supportive. So tell her about it. I'm like, yeah, they like want me to come and race. There's like, he's friends with like a team. There's this team called Ditter. So he knew them, the owner and some of the other racers. They're like, we're going to throw you under their tent and just walk you through the weekend and you're going to race. So I'm like, okay, sounds good. Let's go. So I go there and they're so awesome. They pretty much throw my bike under the tent and they're like, let's fully inspect this thing. So this guy doesn't like break everything out there.
Yeah, they're so helpful. Everybody at the track just wants to help out and teach people. It's we want to help people get into the sport.
Absolutely.
Sure. I mean,
I just owe everything to STT and Owen and, you know, those coaches and people like that, because they really like just pushed you along. And, you know, they could tell I wasn't necessarily uncomfortable. They could tell I was like a little apprehensive about things, and they just like kind of made me more comfortable with it. Like we've seen you do this. We know you can do this. We're not going to just put anyone out here and throw them to the wolves, essentially.
Yeah.
So, but I think a lot of it, like my progression, especially from novice to intermediate, was because I had spent so much time racing cars. You know, I knew what a race line was. I knew what trail braking was, you know, the basic track etiquette, what to do with flags and things like that. Yeah. That's half the battle with a lot of people.
And yeah, you knew all the fundamentals before even getting into it. And so you just switch vehicles, and that's just learning a different vehicle.
Correct. Yeah. And I think that's what a lot of it was.
Yeah.
And then, so I raced that very next weekend, and in practice, I went down in turn 7.
Ah.
Yeah. So I target fixated. I think there's a video of it on my YouTube channel. It was like my third practice session of the day, because it was, we did a practice day first. And it was a decent lap, probably like low 120s or 122s or something. Like sure. First time I've ever been to Blackhawk Farms. And then they were like, oh, you should be on slicks. So here's these slicks too. So I'd never been on slicks, trying to figure out how to keep those things warm.
Yeah.
And I came into turn seven a little, what I thought was weird, and just target fixated right off the track and threw it down. So
yeah, it's easy to make.
Kind of tumbling and stuff. I'm like, oh my God, if I get hurt, my wife is, or my fiance is gonna be so mad. But I was okay.
Yeah.
And I didn't finish last in both of the races I did on Sunday. So
that's good. I feel good. And you felt like you made progress throughout the weekend?
Absolutely. Just everything I picked up in that weekend. And one of the races, I got lapped by Jody Berry.
Yeah, that's not hard to be done.
He came into turn seven. And they're like, so sometimes at club races, you don't really see a lot of like the blue flag. There's so many other flags I need to be worrying about other than the blue flag, especially at Blackhawk. That track can be a meat grinder sometimes. So I'm going on the back stretch, and I brake, like sit up and brake for it to go into seven, like the kink, you know, just kind of like feathered onto the brake. And then Jody Berry just comes around the outside and he goes into the corner with like his elbow and knee down. And I was just like, oh, so you can go that fast through here? That's incredible.
Yeah.
So
then like I knew 15, like I could
start turning it up.
Oh yeah. So. Yeah, that's amazing how fast you can actually go if you have the right body position and suspension set up and right lean angle and throttle control and all that stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah, I had nothing. I had just stock suspension. I had the turn one was there. I had them kind of like set sag and stuff for me. But I had nothing else.
Yeah.
But if you just do that, it's not expensive to go out to the track and try the stuff.
No, it's not.
Spend good money on safety gear if you can, but you don't have to have a fancy bike. You don't have to have all the gimmicks, you know, they're nice to have, but are they going to make you a better rider? No, especially if you don't know how to use them.
Right.
Like
right.
The ZX10 I have has the traction control, wheelie control, all that stuff. But I'm nowhere near the level where that stuff is helping me, you know. I'm still sure. It's I don't know how to explain it. You have to know what you're doing to be able to utilize that stuff correctly.
Right. And a bike like that, it's like you have a Ferrari that weighs 400 pounds, you know.
Yeah.
it's a little bit much for anybody with a 1000. You know, I raced for many years, I've raced for a decade now, and I still not raced a 1000.
Yeah. So the last year at Gingerman, when I went down and dislocated my shoulder, I actually had it put back in, but my bike, I had busted the radiator and some other things. So I was kind of what, in my opinion, done for the weekend. But one of the other, my friends there who was a coach at the time, he's still a coach. He's like, hey, I have to run grid all day. And I was pitted with like a lot of the coaches. He's like, why don't you just try to, cause I had the race the next weekend. So I was like, man, I don't want, when I get back to the track, I don't want to have the last time I rode a bike be crash. So I was like kind of doing anything to just get out for like one or two more sessions on my bike. But then I found out the radiator was smoked. So he's like, just go ride my R1 today. I have to run grid all day, ride the R1. And he had like a 2015 R1. It's actually in my garage right now. I borrowed it at the beginning of the year. So I was like, okay. And I go out and ride this thing around, and it's so easy. This like the way that it's set up, the way him and I weigh similar. And I don't think he has anything done on the suspension, but maybe sag and things like that. But like, it just, the bike kind of fit me and it was fun. I was way slower than what I was going on my ZX6R, but I was audibly, I could hear myself laughing in my helmet.
Yeah.
It was just so, it was dumb fun.
Just from more power and the torque?
Yeah, the torque, the power, like the wheelie control, like coming up the backstretch out of 10B.
Yeah.
Even on my 600, I could get the front light, you know, it kind of like walk, like do this stuff over that. But on the 1000, it would pick it up and just kind of carry it. And then you could hear the power start cutting out. And then it would just like slowly come back down. I was like, and you're just like pinned the whole time. Like, this is awesome. I love this.
Pretty cool, yeah. The electronics, the fancy little bits, they make your day a little bit more fun, I guess.
Yeah. I wasn't like sliding the rear or anything like that. I was just kind of like getting it stopped, getting it turned, and then full throttle again, because that was just a blast doing that.
Yeah.
So, and then when this year my ZX6R blew up, and I was like, man, I don't want to spend, like, used engines right now are ridiculously expensive. It was like, I could, a good one on eBay was like $2,500. I paid $2,500 for that bike.
Right.
I'm not buying.
Well, I mean, if you want a good engine, that's about what it is, you know?
Yeah. So that was just for a used engine. So, yeah. And then I could take the one out of it and go and send it off and have it built.
A refresh.
You're out, what, another?
I had my engine refreshed before it ever blew. I had an 09 600 and I had it refreshed. It was, I don't know, like 2000, maybe something like that.
Yeah. So that, I guess that the money, I guess, only mattered because that's how much I had spent on the bike.
Yeah.
And I like threw suspension stuff on it as well, but I originally got that bike and that was a different bike for last year than the one for 2019. But I had only paid $2,500 for it. So I was like, I don't know. I don't think I'm going to do that. And if I were to send that engine out to get rebuilt, you're still looking at $2,500. And then you're waiting for
weeks.
Who knows? Like, yeah, racing season started.
Yeah.
So the person who I would have considered maybe building my engine, that guy's racing every other weekend. So he's getting, you know, the last maybe 2 days of the week, he's getting his stuff ready.
Yeah.
So you're going to be out of an engine, you know, for 4 weeks maybe.
You just need a spare engine, that's all.
Yeah, that's, you know. And so I was building a race car again as well. And so I had some money sitting around and I was like, you know, I think I'm going to buy 1000.
Yeah.
So I ended up buying the ZX10 and it is not anything like the R1.
Different. How is it different? The characteristics, the handling?
Yeah. So the R1, it like the power is a lot smoother. Kind of like how I fit the R1 is a little more comfortable. Although I bought some more like tangent clip-ons and move the rear sets around a little better to like suit me. So I got like the comfort level of how I sit on the bike pretty similar to how the R1 was, but the power delivery of the ZX10R is so crazy compared to the R1.
Like brutal, just, violent.
It's so violent and it just goes and goes and goes. Like, it's so hard not to hit the rev limiter in pretty much every gear.
Yeah.
Like, you just are going and it's like, and you chip and you go. And it's wild. And it's the guy that I bought it from a guy in Texas. And I had talked to that guy online and he's like, oh yeah, it put down 205 horsepower.
Whew.
And I was like, why am I buying this thing? I don't need this at all. But it's fun though. I audibly laugh in my helmet riding it around.
Yeah.
I want to get more comfortable on it, especially if I'm going to start racing it, but.
You should do a pro school or a speed academy or a superbike school, something like that.
Yeah, that would be fun. I've always wanted to go down to that Colin Edwards.
Oh, Texas Tornado Boot Camp.
Yeah, the Texas Tornado Boot Camp. That sounds fun.
That would be a great one too. Cool.
Yeah, I would be interested in doing like a superbike school and stuff like that. It's just fun to learn more about the sport and learn things, especially now. Like, I've started coaching.
Yeah.
And I didn't really want to at first. I'd been talked to about it a little bit last year. I was like, I don't know. Like, I feel like coaching will make me slower because I'll be out with a bunch of like novice people all the time, intermediate people. And if I'm going to race, like, I need to always be going as fast as I possibly can. And it's not really like that. Like, you can still go out and do when you're coached, like, we can still go to the advanced sessions and do that stuff if we want. But sometimes it's really good to just be reminding people of like the fundamentals, because it like also you're putting that in your own head again too.
Yeah.
Cause I remember I was going through classes with the students and I was like, you know, the stuff about like body positioning and like being comfortable and like taking weight off of your upper body and keeping it in your core. And I was like, man, there are times where I'm totally not even doing that when I'm on the track.
Yeah.
So it's good to like go through those exercises with the students, because it's helping me as well. And it's fun to see people progress. I'm a huge like progression based person. Any like sport or activity I ever get into, there's always like some sort of progression to it. I just took up mountain biking last year.
Awesome.
And that's the same thing. You know, I remember going through trails and I was like, this is crazy. And now I go through those same trails, like full pedal, like as hard as I can. And that's the progression of it, and it's fun.
Yeah, if you're not learning, you're dying, right? You have to go.
Yeah,
You have to
absolutely.
progress, or it's the opposite of that.
Yeah, and it's, you know, this sport is so rewarding when you get things right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's when you get through a section hitting every apex and all your, you know, on throttles are perfect every time, and you have that bike at where you want it every single time, and you know that you can like feel the tires moving around, like the front tire moving around a little bit coming into the corner, the rear tire moving around coming out of the corner, and you know you just hit it. That, I don't know, man, there's not very many things that have given me a feeling like that.
Oh yeah, man, I live for it. I'm an addict, man. I'm a racing addict, and all the aspects of it. I just got to get the finances a little bit better, and I'll be out there every weekend because, man, I just let me give a little personal shout out to myself. I just won a go-kart racing championship last week.
Oh yeah.
I don't know if you can see that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It was a 6-round championship. Five races I got first place, and one race I got second place to the guy who worked there. So I was it was almost a perfect season, and it's so satisfying, even in a 6.5 horsepower 200cc go-kart that goes 50 miles an hour. You got timing and scoring, so you come in every session and you see where you're at in qualifying, and then there's a qualify race, and then there's a feature race. Three sessions, do your fastest laps. And when you're coming around the corners in those carts, or even on the track, there's certain sections that are kind of tight that I always look behind me a little bit. You see a vantage point that's really helpful for you. And so you can see the gaps forming. And every time you're trying to gap someone, you're like, yes, I got a second. Yes, I'm up to two, you know, or whatever, you know, and that's what you're looking for, is just keeping that gap and just trying to stay ahead. And not you don't get close to you. You start making mistakes. The gaps goes down. But in motorcycle racing, when I raced, I never had a full crew with a pit board, so I never knew what my gap was. I was just visually looking over and seeing where people were.
I never look back during races.
You know?
Nope. I just go as fast as I can and try to keep going forward. One of my biggest struggles with coaching is that we have to look back.
Oh, yeah.
So finding the spots on the track where you can kind of look back and see what your students are doing. It's especially when we go to new tracks, like you kind of got to go out in sessions that you're not assigned to coach to, just to ride around and like get comfortable moving your head like a swivel. So you can, okay, when I come out of this corner, I got to make sure that was a technical section. I got to make sure, you know, these students are still with me when we come out of here. And I love how you're still doing some sort of racing. Like, I'm so competitive by nature. Even like if I play a board game or darts with my wife and she beats me, it hurts, man. You know?
Yeah.
Unless I'm like not angry about it, but I'm like, I just think about the mistakes I made.
Like, I could have done better.
Next time.
Yeah.
Next time I'm not gonna do that.
For sure. Usually at the local holidays with the cousins and all that, we have ping pong tournaments and it gets fierce. You know, it's just another thing, but there's some fierce games going on. And I mean, for me, I think I'm an extremely critical person in a good way, because I'm extremely critical of myself, you know. And if you're not, then you let all these flaws just roam around and you never address anything. But so it's hard for me mentally sometimes, but you know, that's how I feel inside. I think it's helpful, but it's hard to live with. You know?
Yeah. It's like being so competitive like that, it's and hard on yourself and critical, is it's good for you, but sometimes it can be like mentally exhausting and you have to take a step back. My wife has had to remind me, and my really good friends, even the ones I've made racing and doing motorcycle stuff, you know, when I go to a new track, like I was fast in a car at Grattan, like I'm pretty quick at a car at Grattan.
Yeah.
So I was expecting, being on a bike, like, oh, I know this track, like I'm gonna rip here, and I could only get into like the 26s.
Yeah,
first time I was there, and I was like angry about it. And I was like, this is the first time you've ever ridden on this track,
right?
And another guy I race with, he's like, dude, it took me years to get into the 26s, and you just showed up and did it. Like, It's yeah, okay, man.
I did 25s in novice and won.
Yeah. Yeah. I won. I think I won the B Super Stock race there last August.
Yeah.
And I think I was running like, I think we were only running like 27s though.
So that's a respectable pace.
Yeah. But when you see other people going so much faster, it's really easy to get into that. You know, you don't know their experience for one, and two, you don't know, you know, they could have had, it's mostly based on experience. You don't know what their bike setup is. You know, they could just have so much more in other little buckets than you, that you don't even know exist. And to just compare yourself to somebody based on time, which is what I've always done, isn't necessarily the best thing to be doing.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's a timed sport. So it's really, there's no other way to compare, you know, especially from when you're kind of this high up looking down at everything.
But you just like have I said, to take it with a grain of salt, you know,
yeah.
Like getting into new sports. I just started a new sport, supermoto. I just did a couple of track days of supermoto riding.
I've always wanted to try that.
It's awesome, man. I'd highly recommend it. The smiles to dollar ratio are off the charts.
Yeah, it sounds fun.
I rode my buddy's XR100, Kawasaki 250, and a Husqvarna 450 on a mix of asphalt, like 85% asphalt and a little bit of dirt. But their dirt had a couple jumps in it, and I have never really done jumps before, so I was twice in the dirt. You know, and you got to realize it's steer with the rear just like a jet ski. You can't be off the throttle in the dirt. You have to keep going.
Right. I've actually only ridden a dirt bike like two or three times. They're fun, but I don't know. I don't really like jumping. I don't want to go flying through the air. I like flat track stuff.
Yeah.
I think that would be really fun to do. I'm not real keen on flying through the air at all. Every time I've left the pavement on a motorcycle, it hasn't ended very good. So,
yeah. Well, this was, you're only getting a couple of feet of air. It's nothing like 20-foot gaps. It's very, 5-6 feet or so for the bigger bikes. I wasn't getting that. I was staying pretty low to the ground.
Yeah.
There's a photographer there and getting everybody, 3-4 feet off the ground. And I'm right here. I'm on the ground completely. I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah. I don't blame you. I've been doing the same thing.
But that's how you learn, man. And so you're just talking about being – slow your first time at the track doing 26s. I mean, that ain't bad. I didn't have a lap timer. I wish I would have had one, but I was ripping it on the pavement section, and I was definitely not the slowest guy out there. I got some new pictures I put up on my website. The first, the second one on the slideshow, I think, are those two pictures. Looks like I have decent body position. You know, it's supermoto, so I'm not putting my foot out. I'm leaning and I'm trying to like drag me kind of thing.
Yeah.
I have a different.
I've seen a couple of like YouTube videos where they'll have just like supermoto races, and I have the Motor Trend live app or whatever. And I think last year they had supermoto stuff on there.
Yeah.
There's a difference in riders. Some will put their feet out and some will put their knee down and their whole body and stuff. And I think it's because they come from two different disciplines and kind of mash them together.
Yeah.
But there's a really cool race. I think it's called like something St. Wendel. I think it takes place in Germany.
Okay.
But they'll race on pavement and on dirt. And they like are racing through the city. And then they like seem to like go into a field with jumps and berms and stuff. And I watched a couple of videos with that. And that stuff is nuts. It sounds so fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And it was one of the coolest things I liked about it. It was Great Lakes Supermoto put it on. Will Wildner, I had him on this podcast not long ago. If you want to check that out, it was open sessions. So they had open track day, no 20 minutes, no 15 minute sessions. The track is open. Sometimes they would say, okay, it's pavement only. Sometimes it would say, you know, mix. And that would be the only designation. And then we had minis out there for a couple minutes, but yeah, I was out there for like 45 minutes at a time. He said, I've never seen anybody put more laps at Auto City Speedway than you just did this weekend. So I was proud of that. And then I didn't race that Sunday. It was SMEC, so Supermoto East Coast. They had their pro round, and my buddy Jeff raced his first pro race for them. And I think he got a podium. He got third. And I think Carl won it. Carl Soltis from Michigan. He's racing Auto America right now. So we got some Michigan boys doing well.
Yeah, that's it's. I always root for the Michigan guys, and especially in like Super Sport, Moto America. And, you know, we have Soltis, Hawkins will show up once in a while. At Blackall, I think he's from Michigan too.
Yeah, Tony Blackall.
Yeah, he was at Grattan this weekend.
Give him a shout out.
What's that?
Trying to get Tony Blackall on here and the Blackall Racing crew on here. Give him a shout.
Yeah, that would be cool. They were at Grattan this weekend. I didn't get a chance to go talk to him or anything, but that bike he has is pretty cool looking. The whole 911 paint scheme. That's pretty unique. You don't
military see stuff like that. First responder
yeah.
type.
Yeah, it's really cool, especially what he does for the veterans and stuff like that. So yeah, Tony, if you hear this, you should definitely come on the podcast and check it out.
He's trying to help him out.
Yeah, another thing that helps with that's helped me like with racing, especially motorcycles. I'm pretty shy in general, and even when I race cars, I was pretty shy. But the way I like look at the like taking a motorcycle on a track or racing it and doing what we do is it's so rewarding. Like I said, when you get it right and everything just kind of falls in line and you make that perfect little sector, little perfect lap or whatever. But there are like severe and drastic consequences for getting it wrong.
Oh, yeah.
And for some reason that like triggered something in my head to not be shy. I will walk up to anyone in the paddock and be like, hey, what do you do through this area? What's this section? What gear are you in? When do you get on the throttle? When do you get on the brakes? When do you turn in? And I don't know why I started doing that, but I have never run into a single other racer or a single other guy or girl. I mean, I've asked August Nord for tips at ACC. Like, what are you doing through here? I have no idea what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And even she was so helpful. And I have not run into anybody that's been like, I'm not helping you, you know?
Even in a competitive environment where they're competing against you?
Yeah. Even they'll be like, oh, no. You know, come out a little wider here before you turn in, and you know, you can get on the throttle a little earlier and just make sure you kind of commit, things like that, you know.
Yeah.
And it's, and they're just regular people, no matter how, what kind of pedestal you might put them on, and no matter how fast they are, how long they've been doing it, you find that they're almost everyone in the paddock is willing to help.
Sure.
I remember at pit race last year, I was standing up against the fence waiting for, I think there was like C Superstock was the first race for me, and I was pitted right next to John Hawkins, and he was kind of up against the fence watching. I think we were watching the superbike race or superbike practice, and I was just like taking some deep breaths, and I like kind of look over at him. I'm like, man, I'm so nervous. And he's like, I'm really nervous too, man. I still get so nervous. And that was like, oh, he's just a normal guy. He's a normal guy. Yeah. You know, but it's cool to just have those relationships building with people and realizing that everyone's there to just have a good time and go fast and be safe. It's awesome.
We all want the same thing, right? We all want to go fast, be safe, have fun, and get a podium, but not everybody can get a podium. Sometimes it gets a little hairy.
Yeah, but I've been in races where you're battling for like 14th, and that's been some of my favorite races. Like, oh, that was awesome. You know, we didn't podium, but whatever. I'm going to talk about that for days.
Yeah, some good back and forth and exchanging corners and passing and repassing.
Yeah.
Oh, it's fun to do. I thought for a while I was going to name this podcast just Racecraft, because I love Racecraft, and just the strategy that's involved with it and how you can use your bike characteristics out with the other guy and just getting him.
Yeah.
Maybe it's throwing your bike up the inside or passing him around the outside he wasn't expecting. You know, those outside passes are pretty rewarding.
Yeah, I made some outside passes at the CCS race last year at Road America in the carousel.
Yeah.
I made like one almost every race I did. I got some on the outside in the carousel, and those always felt so cool.
That you can carry more speed around the outside. You can brake later. You can get on the gas earlier. You can use way more track. You know, like Nelson Ledges even, that turn three long carousel right-hander.
Yeah.
You can use a ton of track there and gain a lot of speed and punch away from people. As long as they don't get up to the inside of you, you know, you have to worry about that.
I was pretty apprehensive last year about racing at Nelson Ledges. I'd never been there before, and I had watched a bunch of YouTube videos of it first. I feel like everyone probably does that. And so that back section where the bump was,
which was
still
which
there, bump? even the big one, like you go into like the first kink and there's like a little one, and then the second one has the like the big
bump. It's a little harder.
Yeah. So I was terrified of that one before I got there. And then after like the first race, that became my favorite section. That's where I made almost all my passes. I was like, oh, I like this now. The bump, just by the time you feel that bump, you're way past it.
Right.
You know what I mean? It doesn't even, you just got to essentially almost keep it pinned all the way through that thing. And it goes so much smoother.
It's very mental.
What's that?
It's a very mental thing where you think you can't do it. So the fear stops you from opening the throttle. But in reality, it's just you thinking you can't do it, but the bike could do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that little interaction with the track surface and how your motorcycle reacts and then you react to something kind of opened my eyes to other areas and other tracks. So, I mean, everyone knows Grattan in the morning can be a little slippery, and the track doesn't really come to until, you know, the second or third session of the day. But I'm able to go so much faster there in the mornings now than what I used to, because I tell myself, oh, I just felt the bike slip, but it already did that. I'm thinking about it now, but I'm already way past that.
Yeah.
Now I tell that to my students too, you know, like, oh, my bike, every time I go through there, it like slips or does a weird thing. I'm like, yeah, but by the time you feel it, you're already past it. So
focus. And you're not high-siding. You're not wobbling. Yeah. It's
fine. You're not on the ground. You're still on the bike. So get back in the throttle. Come on, let's go. And
see, it's just, you have to let the bike do what it wants to do sometimes.
Yeah. You're on three gyroscopes, and all they want to do is stay in the same orientation and direction that they're pointed in.
Yeah.
And unless they get any sort of interaction from either you, an outside force, or something else, an outside force, they're going to keep doing that. So point it where you want it to go, and it'll probably go there.
Yeah. I did one of those Jason DeSalvo Speed Academies back in the day in 2012. I did a couple of them, and it changed my whole perception of how to approach a new track, how to get faster. It's always go slower to go faster. If you are screwing up going 85%, you should not go 85%. You should go 50% and make it perfect. If you can make it perfect at 50, then maybe go to 52%. You know, slowly progress perfectly until you can go faster. And if you're not doing something right, fundamentally, that's why you usually make mistakes.
Yeah.
So
and again, that just circles back on, you know, the sport can be rewarding, but it's also the consequences for getting it wrong can be very severe. It's much easier to, you know, if you're trying to figure out a section, to just keep going at a pace you're comfortable at through that section until you nail it and then start turning it up. Because it's much easier to be like, oh, I'm so slow in that sector, I mean, I can't figure it out, than to be putting your busted bike back on the trailer being done for the weekend.
Right. So. And when we were doing the on-track sessions, I couldn't believe how slow he was going, showing us, like, you can go this slow on the track, just make sure it's perfect, you know? We don't care what the speed is. We want your line to be exactly what it should be. And that was kind of an eye-opener for me. I was like, oh, wow. I was, like, trying to peek around him, like, can I pass him? Like, wait a minute. I'm going to go right now.
Yeah.
You know,
one of my strengths, I think, with racecraft from when I raced cars was my braking abilities. I mean, I would make up so much time on people and the time in general on the brakes with cars. And I think that really helped with motorcycle stuff up to a point. And that point is like the last little bits of trail braking. All my experience in cars had almost a negative effect in translation to motorcycles, because with a car, you can bring so much more brake with you into the corner, because you're not going to tuck the front, and you have a lot more feedback coming to you at the wheel, because you're getting feedback from two patches of rubber.
And, well, sometimes one when you lift the inside wheel, right?
Yeah. Well, that typically doesn't happen unless you're like, until you get back on the throttle, then some cars will lift that inside wheel, or if you bump a curb. But that feedback is what I'm used to come bringing in those brakes into the corner. And I have not ever gotten that same feeling on a bike, but I never like adjusted my brake marker for that. So I would just Obviously, I'm not braking as late as I am in a car, but I would always brake super late all the time on people, like everywhere, even like started racing. I would get people up, you know, standing up straight on the brakes, and then I would essentially just block the corner and you couldn't get around me.
Right.
But then as I started getting to where I'm now with, you know, the top six or top five or podium places, those people know, like, oh, this guy just comes in hard on the brakes late, parks it in the corner. So they just wait and will just drive back around me. But as I tried to get that last little bit of trail braking down, and it was towards the end of last year, that's when I started making mistakes. Like, and that ended with crashes. I had three big crashes in 3 weeks.
Ah.
And all of them have to do with the front and the last little bit of trail braking. So this year I've focused on like, hey, let's move those brake markers back a little bit and maybe not come in and just hot, like, you know. So, and I think that that's really helped. I, you know, coming into some of the corners, I'm like barely on the brake, but I'm bringing in more speed now than I was before, because I would be like, the bike would be going crazy and I'm having trouble getting it turned, and it's because I'm so hard on the brakes.
Sure.
The bike doesn't want to turn because I'm so hard on the brakes right now. The forks are like at the bottom. I'm crushing the tire, and I'm like, why won't this bike turn?
Yeah. I think one of the things that Marquez does the best is he gets on the gas sooner than most people. So if you're on the gas sooner than most people, you're going to be faster at the end of the straightaway.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's actually the case data-wise, but it seems like most of the time he's getting on the gas sooner than people. Although you have to be braking very hard. If you overbrake yourself, then you lose time on the gas.
Exactly.
So it's all about your exits. If you can maximize all of your exits for an entire lap, that's a great lap, right?
Yep.
I don't know. But it's just, there's so many different styles, and your bike characteristics sometimes suit braking harder than others.
Yeah. Some of the people that I race with, and as I learned a little bit more about suspension, then I pretty much was like setting my bike up to be able to brake as hard as I can straight up and down and not like endo or anything. So I had like all this extra like rake and stuff, and the wheelbase was longer on the ZX6R than probably what a lot of other people were running. And that's so I could pretty much just bring it so hard into the corner and get so much done, you know, upright, hard, late on the brakes. But then I would have trouble getting it turned, because the bike would, you know, it didn't even want to turn with a wheelbase that long and the rake all crazy like that. I would have trouble, and the front would chatter a lot.
Yeah.
But then when I could get it stood back up, I could all get right back on the gas as hard as I could. But that middle of the corner thing is what I had really been focusing on this year. And I've made some pretty good progress. So
is it different having two brakes now from coming from a car to a bike? Now you got two, you got a front and a rear.
Yeah. So I've used the rear brake mostly on corner exit when I feel like the bike is trying to wheelie and I'm not even really that good at it.
Yeah.
So I kind of made it to where like the brake is more spongy. So I'm not like blam, you know? So I have a lot more like movement in the lever before the pressure kind of translates to the brake. And I feel like that's helped a little bit.
Okay.
And I've also started to kind of experiment with like straight up and down, like grabbing the back brake to like kind of lower the rear as I'm coming into the brake, because then you can really like hammer it down.
Yeah.
But I've just been really trying to take it easy and just like learn things a lot slower than what I've been trying to force myself to learn things. So mostly to circle back on consequences for getting it wrong. It's much easier to just kind of like dial it back a little bit and go at a reasonable pace. Like you don't need to go out to a new track and, you know, show up and be like, all I need to know is what the track record is and where to start and finish line.
Yep. And what's the time to beat?
Yeah. And we're start and finish. That's all I need to know. See you guys later. Like, no, you're going to have a bad time. So it's more fun to just ride a motorcycle and have fun. And I'm going to race again. I absolutely, you know, aspirations to do that. Who knows? Maybe I'll even jump on grid towards the end of this year and see what happens. But because I'm having fun this year and I'm having a blast and made more friends, and the coaching thing is so rewarding to watch other people progress and learn a sport. I brought friends from Kalamazoo to the track with their street bikes, and now one of them's like, you know, I don't even like riding on the street anymore. I just want to go to the track.
I'm that's like, awesome.
That's also what I want you to do.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's good to do stuff like that. I had a one-on-one this weekend with it was a kid. He was like 15, and we made some good progress through the day, and it was cool. His whole family was so excited about it, and that makes me feel good, you know.
Yeah.
Like, man, I don't have kids or anything, so it's cool to just watch the sport. Like, that kid's the future, pretty much, you know. Yeah. Especially from Michigan, from our neck of the woods. That's who we got to focus on to bring up and stay interested in this, so we can keep these tracks open, so we can keep these motorcycles alive and the motorcycle industry in general, you know.
For sure. What's your training or coaching schedule look like this year?
So I'll be at. I got to fix some stuff on my truck because I've been slacking on some maintenance this year. So I got to fix some U-joint stuff. But if that's taken care of, I will be at Road America this weekend, coaching Saturday and Sunday. Next weekend, I'll be helping out with the We're Up Pro Day. So if you're going to be there,
I'll next be there, weekend, yeah. Next yeah, weekend.
So we can meet in person.
Yeah.
The weekend after that, I don't think I have anything. The weekend after that's the 4 days at Gingerman.
Okay.
So I'll be there for 4 days at Gingerman the following weekend. Then I think I get a weekend or two off. And then we are going to, I want to say maybe ACC and then Blackhawk Farms for coaching as well.
So Audubon Country Club and Joliet.
Yeah. And then I'll probably end the coaching stuff somewhere. I think Blackhawk Farms maybe might be my last one, or I might do the sorry, I'm drawing a blank. There's also a Grattan Day next month. I'll be another Grattan Day, and then ACC, then Blackhawk Farms, and then one more Grattan weekend, I think. Then that'll probably wrap it up. Unless some of us want to get together and maybe do some of the Southern STT stuff as well. So I got to go to COTA this year.
Oh yeah.
That was so awesome.
Ride or watch?
I rode. I brought my friend's R1 with me down there. And
that's awesome.
Actually, I didn't do anything. I showed up on an airplane and rode and coached for a day and then got on an airplane and left, and they took everything for me. So
the best way to do it. How do I sign up for that?
Yeah. Yeah. I was talked into it. I didn't really even know it was happening. And someone's like, "Hey, come to COTA with us." And I was like, "I don't have time." And they're like, "Come down." And I was like, "Okay."
Yeah. Sounds like a blast. Yeah.
It was a really good time. It was an Aprilia day. So lots of guys with super awesome Aprilias. And there was a lot of Ducatis there and big bikes, lots of big bikes. And that was really fun. No red flags all day.
Wow.
It was solid.
Only red bikes.
Yeah. Yeah. And they, even in the novice group, they definitely weren't scared. They were opening them up. I remember I was helping, and this is a funny story from that trip. I was helping in the novice group, and I saw a novice guy come into the hairpin, not from turn one, the one that leads to the big long backstretch.
Sure.
And he like stood two people up going in, just hot coming in, stood people up. And I was like, I'm going to grab this guy and bring him into the pits and talk to him. And so I'm on the R1, and I get around the corner, and I just start just clicking through the gears, bang, 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 going down the backstretch. And I hear a bike coming up on me, and I'm like, oh, it must be another coach. And I look over because it's like really close. So I peek over. This is a novice on the brand new Aprilia RSV4 RR, like 1100s or whatever they are.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because he said, I talked to him afterwards, this was his second track day ever. And I had this R1 like pegged, maxed out, six gear rev limiter. The speedometer stops at like 185. It's like doesn't say anything anymore. And I look over and he's not even fully tucked all the way. So his helmet is just like shaking. His whole head is shaking.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to hit the brakes way earlier than what I normally do, because he's probably waiting for me to hit the brakes so he can hit the brakes. So I hit him like 150, 200 feet earlier than what I normally would. And as I'm going into the corner, I see him just completely blow it still and go, it's like all pavement out there. So he just goes way out.
Tons of runoff.
Yeah, tons of runoff there. If you hit something at COTA, I'm sorry, but you deserved it.
You did something bad.
Yeah. But I just came in the pits. I ended up catching the guy and bringing him in, and I was trying to tell him not to, you know, like, give people lots of room here. You should, if you were that close, you could have just waited to the backstretch and got him.
Yeah.
But as I'm telling him this, I'm like laughing because of what just happened.
Yeah.
And I ended up going out and getting that guy and bringing him in. But it was like the end of the session, and he's like, "Oh yeah, this is only my second track day. I thought it was awesome that I was keeping up with a coach." I was like, yeah, I mean, that's a lot of bike, but
right.
I should probably chill for a little second on that thing." But it was
or which
it was
way awesome. You're going. Yeah.
Yeah. We were supposed to turn left back there, not go straight.
That's a pretty tight turn, that hairpin.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to bring a lot of brakes in that if you want to take it correctly. And
like a six-gear pinned, flat out down to first gear.
Yeah, yeah, all the way to first.
Yeah.
But that was, oh, man. I think about it sometimes when I'm in a bad mood right now. Or not right now, but like if I'm in a bad mood and I will just giggle about it.
Yeah.
It's good stuff for the memory.
Oh, yeah. So is there anything on your mind you wanted to talk about today? Anything we haven't covered yet?
I mean, I was excited about this podcast to kind of do the same thing that you're doing with it. And it's, you know, to get to know people and to learn more about the sport and maybe get other people into the sport. So I guess maybe for people who haven't heard some of your prior podcasts, let's hear some about you, like what got you into the sport and what are you up to now?
Yeah. So I got into the sport because I got arrested for speeding. And I realized I couldn't do that anymore. Stop being a hooligan, get on the street and take it to the racetrack. So that's what I did. And I won. Well, I did a season of track days first. I did two novice days. I did a couple of intermediate days. And I did the rest advanced days. I did like Gingerman, Gretton, Autobahn, all the local ones. You know, I think another one in there. And then the next season I realized I was already passing people who were racing. So I'm like, why don't I just go racing? So
yeah.
I did a full season of novice racing. I won 3 championships. I did expert for another couple of years. I didn't win an expert championship, but I got second place a whole bunch of times, fighting against people who are, you know, decade long experts. So I'm irritated that I haven't gotten one, but I have 50 podiums to my name between motorcycle racing, go-karting, mountain bike, foot racing. I've done one indoor triathlon before. So just trying to stay in the sport. I'm in karting right now. And I have a simulator in my living room for training.
Oh, yeah. Do you do the iRacing?
You know, I will. I want to. I don't have it yet, but I'm just and Formula One with PlayStation. So
it's okay.
I get to play online, but I can't choose a track I want to race easily. Like iRacing can. So iRacing, I played it at my buddy's place and it's awesome. That's really the next step. That one and Assetto Corsa, that's a good one too.
Yeah, I have that for Xbox.
Yeah. So
yeah, it's fun.
Just trying to stay in it. And so I raced from 2010. I was on track from 2010 to 2015. Although I did a track day in 2018 and I just did Supermoto, you know, last weekend. So I'm still trying to stay into it. But I stopped racing the WERA series after I got my pro license. I ran out of money, and I'm trying to build a business, Eric Swan Racing. Well, I'm not trying to. It's already built, and I'm growing it now. I sell products online. I sell race parts. I have 28 brands. One we mentioned earlier, I actually sell Starlane. I'm a vendor. I have like 4 different exhaust brands, M4 Performance Exhaust, the Spark Italian. There's also Akrapovic or Akrapovic, Slovenian, and Kasmis, you know, Carvin Racing, Carvin Exhaust for cars.
Okay.
So all the different kinds of brands. I do mostly motorsports, some mountain bike, a little motocross, but mostly road racing. Like I have Driven Racing. We're just selling their parts recently. Motul suspension setup tools. Kind of all branching out as much as I can with the motorsports scene. And also now I have 61 or so podcasts. So
that's awesome.
My new slogan is podcast sales racing.
I like it.
Keep it simple because that's what I'm doing. And I got one full-time guy working for me now. I actually have about 7 different jobs. I don't do ESR full time yet, Eric Spahn Racing. I still have a day job from 6 to 2 p.m., unfortunately. And then I come home and work my business. And I have two renters. So I'm a landlord. I'm a corner worker now. So on the weekends, I do corner working. I'm a racer, like I said. I'm an investor in, you know, stock market like everybody else is. And I think there might be one more thing I didn't mention. Did I say seven? I didn't count. But either way, I'm a busy boy, and I'm ready to hire another person to take over more things for my business. It's just like, when do you pull the trigger on doing that? Because
yeah,
I do it myself. It's just I have no time now, you know, and sales are picking up. Right now, I have about 20 pending orders for M4 exhaust because they're like 3 weeks out on all orders, and they all
yeah
don't have any stock, which is fine. It's just you know, for drop ships. Everything yeah. from the headquarters, which is great. I don't have to touch it.
Yeah.
But they got to make it now. So once they got tracking information, then I'll upload it to the marketplace and customer will get the product.
Yeah. I mean, it's good to have a backlog as long as it can be managed. So yeah, I guess for me, for work, I do like an engineering technician for like a big medical company here in Kalamazoo. So I help out a lot of like manufacturing engineers, process engineers, design engineers. I work with new product launch, new product development, research and development. I do a lot of like tooling and fixturing design. I'll design the stuff in CAD. And then I also will write CNC programs for that stuff and have it, and then I'll make it. I also TIG weld. And I don't really like MIG welding. I get the necessity of it, but I've been actually welding and fabricating since I was a teenager. That's how I got my foot in the door at a lot of places.
So you've been around Argon for a while now.
Yeah, definitely an Argon addict for sure. So, and I have on and off, I have my own home business where I specialize in fabrication. I mostly build like safety systems for cars, like rollover protection systems, like roll cages.
Okay.
I'll do some plumbing work for like turbocharger systems. I've worked for local performance shops before as like an independent contractor and as a like hired on staff. One of the shops I have a really good relationship still. They're all still my best friends. I'm gonna throw them in here just because the Strictly Performance Motorsports based out of Kalamazoo. Anything that you have that's LS based, you know, Ford Coyote engines. They do some exotics too, like Lamborghinis, Audis, Ferraris, Porsches, in-house dyno, things like that. Those guys have been absolutely instrumental to where I'm at today with car stuff, especially. You know, they were a sponsor for my Time Attack program the entire time I did that, my Time Attack stuff. And even with the motorcycle racing, their shop is where all my parts go. It's just safer, you know, I don't have expensive custom stuff sitting out in front of my house.
Yeah,
I get to stop by there every other day and annoy them. And then, so like maintenance wise, they help me take care of my truck, which I tow my bike to the races with. So they're super awesome guys. If you're local to Kalamazoo or anything like that, definitely give them a shout out. They do shop tours, things like that. They're also helping me with my new race car build. They currently had just finished up my short block. I'm actually building a drag car this time.
Okay.
So, like I said, I'm really big into like fabricating things, and pretty much any cars on the planet, the best fabrication you'll see are off-road trucks, like the like trophy trucks and drag cars. They, from like a fabrication standpoint, nothing tops them.
Yeah. Well, the trophy trucks have so much space to create, you know,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So the new car that I'm building is essentially, I'm going to just try to use the absolute maximum of my fabrication and design abilities on and just have fun making it. And then hopefully it's fast when it's done. If not, hey, it's going to look sweet.
You should take some Formula One parts and stick them on there.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's going to be set up for class racing. So there'll be lots of rules I have to follow, which is something that I have to do, or else it's really easy for me to go down a rabbit hole and then I'll never finish it because I'll be like, oh, I can just do this instead.
You can so just enter nice open class.
A rule book that's like, hey, you can only run a 76 millimeter turbo. You can only run this size engine or you'll have to add a bunch of weight and you can only run, you know, I need those things to kind of like give me a path.
Yeah.
So yeah, once in a while, well, like my friends are building race cars and they need something done, I'm almost always willing to help out. And sometimes I do it for money. Sometimes I do it because I'm bored and I haven't done anything in a while. So once in a while, someone gets free stuff.
So being a race car guy, I wanted to ask you, I don't own a race car or plan to buy a race car in the next decade or so. How do I get behind a wheel? Can I rent a car somewhere? Is there like a...
Yeah, absolutely. They're kind of hard to find, like good rental programs. I don't have a lot of, I guess what you would say, trust in some people's ability to prep something that I'm about to strap myself into, you know?
It's a little risky, right?
Yeah, so with cars, the main thing for me that's always been scary is a fire. On a bike, you know, you don't really have to worry about it. It's pretty easy to separate yourself from it as long as there's no fuel spillage on you. But with cars, like if you wreck and you're wedged up against something and then it catches on fire, you can really have a bad time. So I guess I would look for someone that's established at renting these things. And more than likely, it's going to be probably, if you're looking at SCCA stuff, you're probably going to be looking at like spec Miata type stuff, or, you know, I think their H prepared class is typically like cheaper cars, or maybe E production would be like cheaper stuff. Always go with the cheapest class you can rent a car for, because whatever they have as far as, you know, parts replacement, if you stuff it or something happens, you want to be able to have the ability to cover that. So always look for the lesser classes, and you can have a blast with 150, 200 horsepower on the track
in a car. Oh, yeah.
Absolute blast. That's where the closest racing always is. Look for people that are renting that stuff out. But if you look at anything at like the higher levels, like the Blance Payne series, the Trans Am series, IMSA, the World Endurance Challenge, half the guys on the grid are paying to be there. They're not paid. They're dentists.
Yeah.
And they're renting a GT3 car for the weekend.
Right.
So that's how a lot of teams actually operate now at those levels, which is unfortunate because sports car racing is so unique and so cool. And it's really cool to see cars that are so different from each other racing each other. You know, you have like the big V8 rear wheel drive stuff, like the C7 and older Corvettes and the Mercedes AMG cars up against, you know, your inline six cars, or your mid-engine V6 cars like the Ford GT and things like that, and the Ferraris, all just kind of going at it.
Yeah.
And I think the balance of power rules that they've put in the last couple of years have really helped kind of bring the racing together. I don't really necessarily want to see a spec. I'm not that interested in spec series race car stuff. Spec Miata is cool, but I've tried to watch like the Lamborghini Super Trofeo stuff, and it's because it's, and not to cut any of those guys up, they're out there doing it, but it might be because of like skills and abilities. The Spec Miata guys, I guess if you took all of those guys and put them in those Lamborghinis, it'd probably be more fun to watch.
Yeah.
But like the Lamborghini Super Trofeo series is, like I said, it's a bunch of dentists and, you know, guys who've come into wealth, and then they wake up one day and they're like, you know what, I think I'm going to race cars. Yeah. That's awesome that they do it because it brings money into those sports, but
right.
I don't really enjoy watching, you know,
it's like a pro-am race.
$750,000 of cars get written off because a guy completely misses brake marker.
Yep.
That even, you know, I'm not the greatest, but man, I probably wouldn't have done that.
Sure. Yeah. So it's a difficult thing when they're paying for rides, but I mean, like, I couldn't figure out sponsorship. I don't come from a rich family, so I had to take a step back so I can get rich.
Yeah.
And hopefully I'll be back in the sport, like I said, and I want to do so many different disciplines of racing. I want to do Moto America because that's what I was closest at doing. And that's what I got my pro license in currently. But, you know, I would like to do cars and do karts professionally. I think doing karts first and then doing cars would be even better because
that's
where you get all your skills from.
Any guy that's pro now with racing cars, especially sports cars, all of them came from karting.
Oh yeah.
No one, It's so rare for someone to come up through SCCA or NASA and get into like a paid sports car ride, like a paid GT ride, GT3 or GT4, any or like Le Mans prototype, when you have a kid that grew up racing go-karts, where you have to you have to react so much faster in an open wheel car than you do in a sports car, because everything is tighter, the suspension feedback is more, they're more reactive to changes in surface condition, changes to driver input. So the cognitive abilities of an open wheel racer that's been born and bred to be an open wheel racer, I'm sorry, but they're significantly better than someone who's operated a sports car their entire racing career that has suspension that kind of like more floats around and the car reacts slower to things. So if you put someone that has these quick, fast reaction times, and you know their ability to like use twitch muscles and you know fast minute movements for inputs into what the car is doing and basing that you know off of that stuff, and then putting them in a car that you're not even using half of those skills to operate at the highest echelon, the open wheel guy is almost always going to get the ride. So I definitely recommend if you want to get into karts or getting into racing cars, spend as much time in the carts as you can.
Well, I'm going to keep doing it. You know, they're not that expensive. You can buy a used cart. My buddy at the local karting event, he's been racing cars for like 30 years, he said. And he's selling one right now. He's kind of getting out of it. He's a little older now. And it's like $5,000. You can have it. Oh, geez. That's not too bad. I mean.
Is it a shifter cart?
It was a tag, I think. So it was a senior level cart, you know. It was a good model, but I'm just not ready right now. I got so many things in front of that. I want to do at least do like a season of motorcycle racing again, do some track days before that, and then buy a cart. I want to get that out of the way because it's been a while since I raced bikes, and I just gotta get back to it.
Yeah, you just gotta. I'll tell you what, man, if I can find a decent deal on a spare ZX6R motor and I get that thing thrown in there, you're more than welcome to come and rip around on that on the track. That's why I'm keeping that bike, is just so I can kind of bamboozle my friends and trick them into trying to ride on the track, and then they get hooked, and then I can kind of have more friends at the track, you know? But yeah, once I get that thing back together, I'll let you know, and you're more than willing to come out to a Grattan Day or Gingerman or whatever.
I got my suit.
Yeah, you're ready to go. You got a good helmet. A good helmet that's not expired. You're ready to go.
All I need is a helmet. And actually, I sell helmets now. I sell O'Neill dirt bike helmets and bicycle helmets. I don't sell road racing helmets yet, so I still got to figure out a deal on a lid. But I still get discounts at an old parts place I work at, but they're not great. So
Yeah. Once I get that thing together, that's its only purpose, really, is to say, hey, you should come and try this out. And
I don't think I can probably turn you down if you invite me out. I might throw a leg over it, I guess.
Yeah, well, I'll keep in touch with you on it then.
Very good. Well, we're at our hour and a half already. Okay. Where can people find you online?
So Facebook, Billy Ball. I am pretty terrible at Facebook. I'm much better at Instagram. I always have like a bajillion messages that I feel so terrible about, because I miss them and then forget about them, or I'll look at them and then I will forget to respond. And then because now it's not an alert anymore, I just completely forget all about it. I'm so terrible at that. So I'm sorry for anyone who's messaged me ever. I'm the same way with text messaging.
Yeah.
So I spend more time on Instagram. You can find me at _trainwreck. That's usually where I post a lot more stuff. Also on Facebook, BB52 Racing. And that's also the same thing on Instagram, BB52 Racing. Some fab work of mine can be found under Seeker Systems, SEKER Systems. So,
all right. Yeah. Are you a YouTuber? Do you put out any content with all those track days you're going to?
If I could find my GoPro. Yeah. I lost my GoPro at some point last year. When I find it again, I'll definitely start filming. But I was getting better at it last year. I think we have all the way up until pit race from my races last year up on YouTube. So
okay. Very good. Well, I'm going to wrap this up. I still have another 5, I think, podcasts to edit before I get to this one. So it'll be a couple of weeks before this is posted. But when I do, I'll be sure to tag you and make sure you share it so we can get as many eyeballs as possible. And we tag whoever we talked about.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right. Well, it's great talking to you. Seems like we're already friends. And I'm going to go get some dinner and have a good night.
Yeah, you too, man. Hopefully we'll link up soon and meet in person.
See you at Granton.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Take it easy, man.
All right, see you soon. Bye-bye.
See ya.